Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Arlie Gordon, your host for this installment of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Thank you for joining us tonight. We are looking forward to having a very special guest on the line with us. He has apparently been working on a book for more than collective economics in the Christian community. But beyond simply just a religious topic, it again is more about collective economics regardless of religion, political affiliation, or special interests. Minister Joseph, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you?
It's great to have you with us on the Gist of Freedom is Faith. I just want everyone to know that this show is typically tailored to history and the importance of connecting our people of today, our youth of today, with our history. As I like to often suggest, his story is really our story. And it's so important that we promote the past to, in many ways, uplift our future. And so, Minister Joseph, let's get right into it. First, let everyone know the name of your organization. I believe that you are affiliated with a church in Louisiana. Is that correct?
Yes, it's I Owe You Love is the Way Economic Ministries.
Wonderful. And understanding that church is big business, I'd like you to elaborate a little bit about the thrust mission of your ministry.
Well, the whole purpose, you know, we hear a lot of the talk about the economy and the terrible global condition that's taking place across America and how it impacts the middle class worker and the worker in general. The downward spiral of America's middle class. And we hear foreclosures, millions of people losing their homes,
mm-hmm.
their jobs, their cars and repossessions. And the question
mm-hmm.
should be asked, where are the Christians to demonstrate love for the economic well-being of the other? Well, America's middle-class workers in general, why are they not organizing to help one another? And what I discovered is that the majority of Christian workers operate from a position of financial weakness. And this has been historically the case. The worker of the world has always operated from a position of weakness, and whenever they need finances to make a large purchase of a home or car or furniture, they always find themselves relying on the predatory lender.
Mm.
Now, the predatory lender is called the predator because they financially prey on the worker.
That's right. That's right. The buzzards and the vultures.
Yes. Now, I look at it from a Christian perspective. And in the teaching of Jesus, when he looked and saw the multitude, he compared them to the scattered sheep without a shepherd. And he recognized that they were in need of compassion because they were targets and prey for the wolves of the world.
Mm.
So Jesus Christ compared people to sheep. And then he also explained how the wolves were out to get them. In this reality, the Christian is actually food. It's actually a financial food source. And what we have is that the average person don't see themselves as being food. But we all know that if you don't know what's going on in this world, the world will eat you alive. But if we look at ourselves from a Christian perspective and see ourselves as being food, then what happens is we recognize that we are targets. And even physically, if you are in the water, a dog wants to eat you alive. If you're in the jungle, a lion will eat you alive. So people really are food. Also, become a fun, not only are they an economic food source, they're also an organic food source, and they're also a financial, a spiritual food source, because the Bible speaks of the devil walking about like a roaring lion, seeking who he may devour. So in this context, we look at three food chains. We look at a financial food chain, we look at a spiritual food chain, and an organic food chain. Now, we all know what the organic food chain is about. The big fish eats the little fish, and the wolf eats the sheep, literally. And the financial food chain, well, it works similar to the organic food chain in that whoever has more knowledge and is more powerful financially prey on those who are less knowledgeable. And the beat goes on from the World Bank right to the guy who's dealing with crack on the streets in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
The spiritual food chain is a little different because we should recall Jesus himself said that he was the bread of life. And he too is food, but he's the kind of food that he actually feeds others so that they can become more powerful and more enlightened as to what their condition is. And so those in the spiritual food chain who have more knowledge are obligated to feed those with a lesser knowledge. Now, in dealing with the financial situation of the Christian worker or the middle-class worker in America, we find ourselves in a new global 21st century economy, which is different. For the first time, American workers are experiencing the impact of what's taking place from workers around the world and economies around the world. With the free trade agreement and NAFTA, America now is involved with the global community and the global marketplace. And now the American middle-class worker is competing with the third world worker, who has worked, they have been forced to work for wages as low as 50 cents an hour. And so in this type of environment, the third world worker, he recognizes that he has more opportunity in America. And so if he can get to America and make $5 an hour, well, that increases the standard of his life. And also this helps the corporate conglomerate, the international corporation, because now they have cheaper labor and a happy worker.
Let me chime in, if I may, Minister Joseph.
Sure.
I think when you talk about this particular aspect of our economy and society and even the fact that we are, as a country, at the lowest poverty levels in about 50 years, if I'm not mistaken, okay, one of the things that I see happening is that they are imprisoning our young to be the workers that they were once getting from overseas. And so I'd like for you to speak to that.
Yes, this is part of the new initiative in the new 21st century global economy. See, America is one of the countries throughout history that has created a middle-class worker that has reached a standard and a lifestyle that no other middle-class worker has ever had in the history of nations. And so it's unusual if we look at the American middle-class worker and compare the workers of the world throughout history. And so it's to the advantage of the rich, who the Bible speaks of as ruling the poor. It's to their advantage to keep the worker at a low wage.
Of course.
And less educated. And so with the new 21st century global economy, the American middle class worker is a target. He or she is a target regardless of race, regardless of religion. The simple fact that they are an American worker who have achieved a level for the worker and a lifestyle for the workers that has never been achieved before in the history of mankind. Now, with the new global initiatives, there is a new capitalistic environment where there are winners and losers, and the gap between the rich and the poor is steadily widening. The pattern has already begun.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a downward spiral of the American worker. The corporations are taking jobs overseas for the cheap labor, and manufacturing concerns are leaving small towns, and the unemployment has reached an all-time high. And so we are feeling the effects of a new 21st century global hostile economic environment. The question is, are we going to sit back and remain silent and do nothing? Or are we going to just make a new way for ourselves? Because new conditions require new strategies. And this is where my book comes into the picture, Message to the Working Christian in America. Now, as you know, the majority of people in America profess Christianity as their religion. And I focus on Message to the Working Christian in America because the Christian worker, they all have something in common. They all claim to believe in the doctrine and teachings of Christ.
Okay, and so let me ask you this, Minister. What would Jesus say about our current economic condition?
Well, this is what was taking place in the first century. When Jesus saw the multitude, they were scattered as sheep without a shepherd, and he felt compassion for them. And so he told the workers, because they were working people, he told them to come to him, and he said, learn his ways. And the way of Christ was the way of love, to have love for one another, because love is not just dealing with romance. Most of the time when we think in terms of romance and we think in of love and we think of people having good feelings toward one another, all this is good. But love is beyond that. To love thy neighbor as thyself is the perfect definition of social justice. And social justice includes economic justice. To love thy neighbor as thyself actually solves the problem of crime if people adhere to it. There would be no crime and there would be no wars in the world. To love thy neighbor as thyself is the only world peace to ever come about between humanity. There is no other philosophy, there is no other political ideology or theory that can bring about peace on earth among humankind other than the doctrine of love thyself as thy neighbor. That simple doctrine is extremely powerful because what happens when people began to demonstrate love to the other, they immediately have respect for the other human being, the other neighbor.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate. I agree with you that love thy neighbor is one of the primary teachings of Christianity, even of the Bible, regardless of religion. And it's something that we have seemed to have lost sight of and right of and might of, because I would suggest to you that growing up in Brooklyn, New York, as a child, about 30, 40 years ago, our community was more of a community whereby other adults on my block and in my neighborhood would take a conscious interest in my upbringing. And what seems to have happened in this generation is that we no longer have that sense of family in our community. And so I would argue with you that while the mantra, love thy neighbor, is still viable and valid and valuable, it is something that we have moved far, far away from.
I agree. See, the word community means the prefix is commune and the suffix is unity. So you're dealing with a people being in communion, having at least a collective consciousness of community. And that brings about the unity and the oneness of purpose between many individuals. And what we have today, we have more neighborhoods, hoods,
than
communities.
That's right.
Now, here's what takes place. See, when we deal with the doctrine of love, love embodies supreme intelligence and divine wisdom when you display it. It gives people maturity. Because when you demonstrate love, you don't fall into the response of returning evil for evil. You rise above that level and as Christ said, God forgive them, they not know what they do. And he was talking about those people who were screaming, impale him. This was at Calvary. Now, these people were out of their minds. When Jesus said that not know what they do, he was saying that these people are crazy. In other words, love sets the standard and the criteria of what a sound mind is. To love thy neighbor as thyself is a soundness of mind.
Okay, let's get to the book, because I'm very interested. When you and I introduced ourselves prior to coming on the air, we talked a little bit about the power of collective Christian economics, and even again Stay with me for a second, Minister, and I want to make sure our listeners clearly also know that this is something that could transcend religion, politics, and special interests. And so I want to get to the nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to it, because we only got about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure people understand your model.
Sure.
Okay? Rather than reflecting on because we all know the condition of our country and people and economy right now. Let's talk about, I'm more solutions driven, so let's come up with the solutions, okay?
The solution that we're dealing with is IOU Love is the Way. And what that does, it puts us in a mentality and a frame of mind where we are now concerned about the economic well-being of our neighbor, of our brother and sister in our congregation or church. And what we do is we follow the pattern and the example left by the first church in the Bible at Pentecost in the book and Acts of the Apostles. They organized all their resources, their human capital, their social capital, their financial capital, and their spiritual capital, and they had a Christian economic team approach to earn a living and make ends meet, and none of them lacked anything. They all had all things in common. Now, to update that version and their economic team approach, what we're doing is we live in a capitalist environment, so we have to deal with a corporation. So what we're dealing with is organizing 1,000 working families at a time into a Christian shareholder company where all the members are co-workers, co-owners, and some will be co-workers in that I did a demographic profile of and a survey of 1,000 Christian households, working families, and they were spending over $25 million in disposable income. That's your take-home pay after taxes. The breakdown was the average family.
Is that an annual figure?
$25 million annually with 1,000 families.
Okay.
Now, the breakdown was the average family spent $125 a week on child care. Now, if you times that by 1,000 households, that's $125,000 a week. In 4 weeks, that's $500,000. In 12 months, that's $6 million that these 1,000 families were spending on child care. In just 1 year, and every
right.
year they're going to have to spend $6 million on child care.
Right. Now, what we do with
our shareholder corporation, what we do is we form collective arms of Christ. We use this term whenever there's a problem that the families are all sharing in common. Well, you know, if you are being attacked by a person, your arm is lifted and to defend the body and shield the body from harm's way. Well, mm-hmm. the collective arm of Christ becomes the shareholder corporation. Wherever there's a problem that we need to address, we start a Christian shareholder corporation. We look at the demographic profile. We see what the zip codes are, where the money is being spent on child care, and we put up a 24-hour child care development center. Here is where we create our own jobs. And each of the families receive quarterly dividend checks from the profits for the rest of their lives. We have 3 8-hour shifts, and we look at the 1,000 workforce because we have the most skilled workforce in the world in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so we identify those who are skilled and have gifts with working with child care, curriculum design, et cetera. And then we have 8-hour shifts. Now, we also have to deal with food handlers because we'll have a cafeteria and a restaurant. And so we're going to deal with putting more people to work dealing with the food. We're going to also need people in security, so there'll be security work. We'll also need janitors, et cetera. And all of these people will be co-owners and employees.
Let me just suggest this to you. Two things. Number one, it's a great model. I've looked at various models. Collective Black People Movement has one. The Black Economic Advocacy Party has a similar model. But they have all had challenges breaking through in terms of collective value in a what's in it for me society. What makes you any
different? Well, this is where,
let me suggest this to you, Minister, that it's even more difficult when you're making it a Christian thing or moving it out of the church because, again, you're not going to be able to effectively engage Muslims on your block. You're not going to be able to effectively engage those who are non-Christians on your block when you're talking about a Christian economic empowerment model.
Well, here's where the teaching of Christ becomes the master teaching for all. And those who are of another religious belief system, they can look at what we're doing. And I would be totally open to deal with any group, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, whatever, it doesn't matter. And if they would like to look at our model and implement them in, implement it in the mosque, so be it. But here's the
right.
thing.
Okay.
Now,
see, that makes more sense to me, because if we remove the barriers of entry, so to speak, and make it more palatable for all of us, regardless of whatever God you may pray to, or whatever
exactly. Here's where the doctrine of love comes in. I owe you love
right.
anyway. See,
right.
so in dealing with love, we transcend belief systems, and we deal with the love of God's beloved, the human being, regardless of whatever they profess to believe. And God's his sudden and reign falls upon everyone. And so here is where the doctrine of love is superior, and it carries supreme intelligence and puts humankind on another realm of thinking, where they transcend the social Darwinistic ideology of survival of the fittest and the I've got mine, get yours mentality that's permeated American society and has
right.
also infected the church.
That's right.
And so what we find is millions of Christians losing their homes, and other Christians are where is the institutions, where is the churches, etc. However, what we're dealing with is not so much to point the finger at what people are doing wrong. We want to show the light of truth, and how if we demonstrate love for each other, we can now move into another realm and start operating from a position of financial strength instead of weakness.
Hi, Joe. This is Leslie. Joe, can you
yes.
hear me?
Sure.
I just have a quick question. How would your church differ from the church that Christ accused the money changers of operating in the church?
Once you start talking about
money and mixing it with the church, how would you defend yourself?
Well, here's the thing.
The same people that he threw out of the church or the temple and accused them of being money changers.
Okay, well, here's the situation there. When Jesus went into the temple, the money changers were financially ripping the people off. They were wolves. They were predators. They were not helping. They were not helping the average beloved person of God. They were literally financially eating them alive, and they were like the wolves eating the sheep. And Jesus exposed them for who they were. What we're dealing with is a system of love for each one. The well-being of the other. So what we're dealing with is where Christians, regardless of what denomination, they can participate. And
You're breaking up something awful. I don't know. Do you have any comments about that question?
I think that you bring up that's one of my major concerns is bringing the conversation of money into the church, because there have been past situations, there have been past challenges when we mix economics with religion. Now, that being said,
I can address that very easy. Actually, when you deal with money, see, to live is to consume. So everybody who lives must deal with consumerism, and they have to deal with an economic affairs in their lives.
Right.
And so a methodology and a teaching how Christians can deal with their economic affairs, and this is what the first church did in the Bible.
Minister, I'm going to argue with you, because let me tell you something. I, through my nonprofit and youth work over the past, more than 20 years in Detroit now, I've met with thousands of ministers, deacons, pastors, bishops, heads of church throughout the city of Detroit. And this is what I've come to realize. Half, if not more, of those individuals do not have a genuine vested interest in the betterment of the community. Half of them, if not more, have a very single-minded desire to fill their basket at the expense of the community.
Well, here's where this is the reason why we are in the condition we're in the American Christian working community.
Yes.
There is a lack of love. What you're saying, all of that is basically a lack of love. It's
well, lack
dealing
of true
with
love.
Selfishness. Yeah, lack
right.
of true love.
Right.
And so you're dealing with selfishness. You're dealing with a social Darwinistic ideology that has infected the church with the survival of the fittest and I've got mine, get yours mentality. Now,
right.
here's the thing. People go to church to get a blessing, but in actuality, people are the church. So it's like for them to think that that church is a place to go to, that means that they're already off of the actual truth of what Christianity is.
Yeah, okay, so there is a warped sense of Christianity, Minister. I would agree with you. In fact, there are churches that have the ideology that you need to be putting more money in the basket despite this economy and despite the fact that your husband lost his job and despite the fact that you have...
Well, here's where I understand exactly where you're coming from, but here's where you can't put new wine into old wineskins. You see, we don't put the old thinking into the new thinking. The old wineskin is basically a traditional approach of how Christians have dealt with things, which have been more socialistic, more Darwinistic than anything. It's been more self-seeking.
So, Minister Joe, my concern is, I have a quick question. My concern is, how can you divide love up between being very concerned with the money aspect of the church and at the same time being concerned with the souls? And see,
then I would suggest to you that there are, even within the same walls of a church, the haves and the have-nots. And so when you talk about some economic model,
all of these problems that you're addressing, all of these economic problems, and can be, I address in the book very clearly. And basically here's what I'm dealing with. You see, I'm dealing with the total person. I'm dealing with the soul, the spirit, and the physical person, the total person. And so when we deal with the Christian, we're dealing with a member of the body of Christ. This person, once they become a Christian, is no longer alone. They are part of the body. Now, the body of Christ is the church. And so when the church, when the people, that's the people. The people are the church, not the building structure. So when the people are hungry, the church is hungry. When the people need child care, the church needs child care.
We got that part.
You see? And so what we're dealing with now is we're not separating the person and making them into a schizo. This is how the Christian is today. On Monday, on Sunday, you deal with love. They put their best foot forward, the body of Christ.
But you plan on managing their money. Part of your church plan is to manage your Christian's money. So how is that different?
We're dealing with a trust-based entity. We're not dealing with a non-501c3. We're not dealing with a non-profit 501c3. What we're dealing with is Christians becoming part of a profit-making shareholder corporation. They become stockholders.
Jesus, when he went and recruited his disciples, that was the mantra that he used? Or did he tell them to take off the money and leave that behind?
Here's what happened. When Jesus started his ministry, the very first thing he did was he identified 12 apostles. He started an economic team, a spiritual team. You see, he didn't do it. He didn't start his ministry alone.
Did he tell them to take off their money belts?
What they did was pool their resources together. They pooled their financial resources together. They pooled their human resources together and their spiritual resources together. And they started a ministry led by Christ who showed them the light of how to become free from sin, death, as well as freedom from enslavement. Because the Bible says in Proverbs that the borrower becomes a slave to the lender. And so when you find Christians and people back in the first century, these people were slaves to the money lenders, like they are today. Jesus gives us a doctrine of how we can become free spiritually, physically, and economically.
Okay, Mr. Joe, how can people get more information about this interesting collective economic model?
I can give my phone number for those people who would like to have follow-up questions and address some of the issues you raised, because these are the issues I raise in the book. And the biggest problem that people have is a lack of love, a lack of understanding of truth. And so my phone number is 318-426-4541. And I'll repeat that. 318-426-4541.
All right.
And
hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Now, is there a website that you might have where people can learn more information?
No, we are working on our website now. The major focus is to have the book published the first part of the year. I'm presently now organizing Christians in Louisiana. I'm organizing them in Houston, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, and New York City. I'll be in New York 2 weeks from now.
I'm working with a group out of Brooklyn, New York, called the Black Church Means Business, and I'd like to connect you with them in the hopes that you can work together towards a greater good in this particular capacity. Okay.
Sure, I would love to meet the group of Christians doing that.
Okay, great.
So you can pass my number on to them, or you can call me back and give me a contact person and a number. And we'll get things rolling, and then we can get back on the show in the future and give you a follow-up.
Wonderful. That sounds great. Thank you, Minister Joseph. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you for being a part of this very inspiring conversation.
Thank you very much.
Swazi, 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 Swaz flash right without a moment.